Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips and the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th of January, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. And yes, it is the 27th of January, which means it is the birthday of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Too many notes.
Okay, following the publication last year of the data collected by Windows 10, built-in telemetry and diagnostic tracking, Microsoft announced on Wednesday that the next major Windows 10 update, due around March or April, will support a new app, the Windows Diagnostic Data Viewer, that will allow Windows users to finally browse and inspect the data that the system has been collecting since the day you installed it. And oh, by the way, then reporting those data to Microsoft. Windows 10 has two settings for its data collection, basic and full. The documentation last year described all the data collected in the basic setting, but only gave a broad outline of the kinds of things that the full setting collected. The new app will show users precisely what the full setting entails in a comparison with what would be sent with the basic setting. The utility of the app will tend to vary depending on what data are being inspected. The presentation is low level. Microsoft screenshots show JSON structured data using various magic numbers, numeric values that encode information, but without any key to explain what information each number encodes. So the straightforward reading and interpretation will remain limited until the detectives out there get done with their detecting. As with the specification from last year, the new tool is a step forward in openness, but arguably not really addressing any of the data collection complaints that Windows 10 has generated. The reaction we've seen consistently in common threads, email, Twitter, beyond, is not so much a concern over what Microsoft is collecting, but rather the mere fact that Microsoft is collecting data. The view has been expressed to us repeatedly and at length that the company should offer an option to mainstream users that has no data collection at all. That is an option, by the way, already offered in the Enterprise Edition, because Enterprise Edition people pay lots and lots of money, and so when they speak, Microsoft actually listens to them. Being more transparent about first basic and now full data collection doesn't move any closer to offering such an option. It shows that Microsoft feels it has nothing to hide and that there's nothing untoward about the collected information. But the company continues to maintain that this collection serves an essential role for detecting, diagnosing, and addressing bugs and incompatibilities among the enormously diverse Windows ecosystem. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft will let you see the data they collect. Your choices are, I trust Microsoft with my life, I would like to see those data, I don't care how much data they collect, and you still use Windows? So far, and quite predictably, over 50% of you voted you still use Windows, followed by I would like to see those data. Nobody so far trusts Microsoft with their life. Now, I know that you'll have more to say about this.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. And the second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the first item in the poll discussion is 27 Jan 18. Microsoft will let you see the data they collect, and you can type some stuff in there and make your opinion known there. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-04. 15.
Now,
So they're still going to collect it, but now they're going to show you what they're collecting.
Well, but they're showing you what they're collecting, but yeah. But what they're showing you are those magic numbers and and pieces of and
are they showing all of it though?
Well, we don't know that either, of course.
See, right. I mean that's the big thing. And Nick, this right now I'm going to defer talking about this story versus the other story that you talked about, the C-books coming out.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's not get too far.
No. I'm going to say that's what I said. I'm going to defer it until you bring up that story and then kind of voice my opinion then. But this is, again, scary. You know what I mean? They're collecting all this information.
Right.
And, oh, what happens if somebody else, since they're getting into your system and gathering all that information, why can't somebody else sneak in the back door, too, and gather that same information? Hello?
Right, absolutely right. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this and what people figure out about the magic numbers and what they actually mean. And I'm sure there will be people.
Yeah, they all add up to you're hosed.
Well, yes, yes. But that's why I prefer Linux. That's why I prefer a Chromebook.
You got it.
Everybody is collecting your data, of course. Facebook, absolutely notorious. And of course, every time you take one of those polls, you know, what's your stripper name? Well, it's the name of your first pet. Oh, wait a minute. Isn't that one of your bank's security questions?
Duh.
And your last name is the street you lived on. Oh, wait. Isn't that one of your bank
one
security
of your three
questions?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we, you know, just so we can see that and show it to other people, we gladly give that information away. Every day.
Yeah.
So the new one now is adding up money. Have you ever had a beer? Have you ever smoked a cigarette? Have you ever been outside the country?
Right.
So at least that doesn't give away security questions yet.
But in aggregate, they now know who drinks and who, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so
you're going to get more ads for alcohol.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they're different statistics that they could still sell out there, because like we've said before, and I've been saying it right along, viruses, you know, they're still out there, but they're not as prevalent as back in the days, back in the 80s and all that. Oh, we worried about virus and you got to have good virus protection and scan everything and that. Whereas now, as dumb as they are, they're actually pretty smart, these guys out there. They're figuring out, well, we didn't derive any money from that, but if we go ahead and do these little scripts and steal personal information, like emails and everything else, we can gather billions, that's a B, billions of email addresses and everything else and sell those to spammers and make money. Hello?
Right. And the people who are putting out all these little cute surveys, like Steve said, they're selling those data to advertisers.
And
what
making
do you think
money.
You think
Hello?
They're doing that to amuse you? No. They're making money off of that. I never answer any of those.
And see, that's where folks don't understand. That's where they can get other emails and everything else, because it was stolen from somebody else's computer that wasn't protected, and your email address happened to be on that list, and now you're going to get spammed.
Well, right. And Thursday night, I gave a talk to the Rochester Professional Consultants Network, which was a lot of fun, by the way. Nice group of people. But one of the things we talked about was protecting your systems. And I said, you know, if you aren't locking your phone, I don't care because it's your data. You can do what you want with it. But if you've got my phone number, my private phone number in your contacts list, you dang well better be protecting that phone.
Mm-hmm.
You dang well better have some sort of lock mechanism on that phone, because that's my data now. That's not those aren't your data. Those are my data.
Exactly. Hello.
People forget, you know, what that's all about.
Because we get so complacent and so, you know, just like remembering phone numbers and everything else. Most folks can't remember other folks because it's automatically, you just scroll down the list and boom, hit a picture. And it automatically dials for you. Or you can call it up on your phone.
Right.
You know? It's just so easy because not using your mind to remember phone numbers. Because I can remember back in the day, that was the big thing. You had to know, you know, 15, 20 people's phone numbers.
Right.
Because you didn't have, you know, you know, cell phones and everything else, you...
I knew everybody's phone number. I couldn't tell you my number without looking it up anymore.
Yeah.
You know, somebody asked me for my daughter's phone number.
Yep.
I honestly don't know it. I know that where I push the picture.
We're all guilty.
Even when you look in your phones now, you don't know their number because it's by their name.
It's my point.
Yeah.
And you know what I saw? I went into this one building, and I actually saw a payphone. I mean, those are becoming far and few between.
Yeah, no kidding.
Doctor's office and that, doctors and a few other offices, and right there in the lobby was a payphone. I go, whoa, that's a shrine.
Did you pick it up and see if it was actually live?
Yeah.
Wow. Just amazing.
There was a disturbing report that came out. They talked about it in Security Now a couple weeks ago on exploiting our browser's autofill to put in information that you don't know is being tracked. And one of the things that they found is some of the stuff they track is your birth date, your age, your gender, your nationality, your height, your weight, your body mass index, your eye color, your hair color, your education, your occupation. A huge list of things.
Because people will pay for those data,
right.
And mm-hmm. so they want to collect those data.
And so they're exploiting kind of a loophole in autofill. So you're on a form that asks for your username and password, so you hit autofill, or more frequently the browser just autofills it for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Off the screen where you can't see, it'll fill in your name and your address, your credit card number. So if you have your browser remember credit card numbers for you.
Yeah, never do that.
And all this stuff is getting filled in automatically with these autofills off the screen where you can't see it. And there were two companies, AudienceInsights.net and BehavioralEngine.com, that were tracking and selling this information. And they all claim that it isn't personally identifiable. But if they have your height, your weight, your gender, your...
If they have my phone number and my name, how is that not personally identifiable?
And your height and your weight and your gender and your body mass index and your hair color and your eye color.
that narrows it down.
What kind of car you have, insurance stuff, because you've probably gone to your insurance company and maybe paid an insurance bill online. And so that was. I'm going to post a couple links to that. That was in Security Now three weeks ago now, I think. And the really scary one that for all Windows users is a report from Microsoft that the January 3rd Windows update, which was their normal update of January, may not install on your computer if you don't have an antivirus loaded that is marked as compatible.
Huh.
So apparently Microsoft's update ran into problems with antivirus. And part of this was the meltdown mitigation.
Right.
So trying to limit what user space can see into kernel space. Third-party antivirus programs need to get into your kernel to check for viruses. They have to be running at that very low level. And so apparently the mitigation for bad guys looking at your kernel cache is the AV can't look at it either. And so if your AV isn't compatible, you'll get a blue screen when you load this update. So Microsoft decided to create a new registry flag, and compatible AV software will set a registry entry. If you don't have compatible software, or say you're not running AV at all, you will not get any more Windows updates.
Wow.
Because they don't, well, good on their part, they don't want to brick your machine.
Right.
But that's pretty...
Do they have a list of what's compatible?
Of course not. You have to check with your vendor to see if your AV is compatible. Microsoft's own AV is.
Well, there's a shock.
So for most people, Windows Defender Security Essentials is enough. Because it's from Microsoft, it can look in the kernel already.
Right.
You don't need to have a third-party software trying to grab into your kernel.
Right.
But this can be a problem. So if you've noticed you haven't been getting you didn't get the January update, February updates, you know, due in a couple of weeks, this may be the problem.
Interesting. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And here's another lovely new thing. Now, this is a rumor. Just in time for its 10th anniversary, Apple might finally be killing the MacBook Air. If this is true, it'd be the first axing of a laptop line from Apple since the iBook and PowerBook were axed back in 2006. It would also be about time. Apple quietly killed the 11-inch MacBook Air back in 2006, but the larger 13-inch version has lingered on, getting a mild processor refresh last year that still left the laptop using a fifth-generation Intel processor, which is still three generations behind the processors currently found in the MacBook Air's competition. But it's still the cheapest laptop you can buy from Apple brand new, and consequently people with $1,000 and a need to cling to a brand still go out and buy this when a new MacBook Pro, which is almost exactly as thin and light but significantly more powerful, is just a few $100 more. Hopefully that will change soon. There are indications that General Interface Solution, a touch panel maker based out of Taiwan, is expected to land a big order from Apple for LCD displays. According to numerous sources, those displays are intended for an entry-level 13-inch MacBook. The MacBook was originally Apple's entry-level laptop when it was introduced as an iBook replacement back in 2006. Then it was slowly supplanted by the MacBook Air, which started off super sleek and overpriced before becoming the entry-level device now found in blog newsrooms everywhere. So retiring the MacBook Air and bringing in a cheaper MacBook at that price makes sense. What's surprising is that the entry-level MacBook would be a 13-inch laptop. The current MacBook, which starts at $1,300, is a 12-inch device. Typically, the smaller the laptop, the cheaper it is. This detail adds a reason to be skeptical. So, do you use a MacBook Air? What do you think of it? And what would you replace it with? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. The MacBook was the consumer version, and the MacBook Pro was the professional version. And then the MacBook Air came out to be the thin and light, but it was more expensive than the MacBook. So when they were able to get that price down, they discontinued the MacBook brand in 2010 for the MacBook Air. Then they brought back the MacBook brand in 2015.
Right.
As the Air replacement, it's got the Retina screen, it's got the faster processor, it's thinner and lighter than the Air, but it cost more for all the newer things in it. So we expected the Air to get killed then, and it hasn't, because the Air is under $1,000. It's that $1,000 barrier. So if they can get the MacBook under $1,000, they can kill the Air.
Right.
And then we'll get a better MacBook Pro.
Right.
And there's a lot of people at the high end of the MacBook Pro line that don't consider it a Pro. I have a MacBook Pro, and I was racing this morning because I forgot one of my dongles. I left the dongle in the car. It's a dongle life. I have a bag of dongles, and the other dongle I'll use on another computer.
The one he uses wasn't
there. The one I need
here.
Yeah. So I've got Thunderbolt 3 ports, but the connectors are different, so you need adapters for all your old stuff. And it's limited to 16 gigs of RAM because Apple went with low power memory.
Right.
So they're concentrating on battery life in the Pro instead of performance. It is a quad i7, but because they're going low power, the cores will slow down to save power.
And you wouldn't think something named Pro would be underpowered.
Right. And so a lot of people have said this isn't really a Pro. Now the iMac Pro is a, that's a fast computer.
Yeah, right.
With Xeon processors in it. Leo Laporte unboxed it on MacBreak Weekly because it just showed up. And, oh, it's unboxed. So they had an impromptu unboxing. And one of the video renders they do, he said their video guy, it generally takes overnight to do this render. And they don't turn on motion blur because that would make it take all week. So on the MacBook Pro, and he only got the 10-core model. It did the whole thing with motion blur in an hour.
Wow.
So if you are doing video editing, Hollywood movie type stuff, even corporate video training, this is the machine to get.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is from Palmyra, New York. And is it Bert?
Yes.
Yes, Bert. What can we do for you?
Believe it or not, I'm calling for my son.
Of course you are. It's not me.
His wife's at work today. He's got the kids. They won't give him a free minute to stay on the phone.
Of course.
Okay. All right. I give up. He's got an HP Model 14 blah, blah, blah notebook that's about a year old. It's got a kind of small solid-state drive in it. He added a larger solid-state drive to the machine. He managed to wangle it into a slot that could have taken, like, a CD drive or something.
Sure.
But he can't get it to work as his primary hard drive. It's being, the big one's just being used as storage, and he can't figure out how to switch them, you know, slave-master relationship there. I'm sure he's listening. Maybe you could give him a pointer where to head with the thing.
Well, one of the tricks is you need a third boot drive because you have to switch the disk management plugin,
right.
And you have to switch your primary partition from the one drive to the other drive. But you can't do that while you're booted from the primary partition.
Right.
So you have to boot from a third disk in order to switch it from the first to the second. Then you can install Windows on that second disk. And so if you have a Windows installer, in fact, what you should do, download the Windows 10 ISO, and then you write that to like a flash drive. You boot that flash drive, then tell it to install Windows on the new drive, which it will then make primary.
Slick, yeah.
Then you can copy your data from the other drive, or leave the data on the other drive and use
that as
backup.
However you want to do that.
Yeah, he can always pull the other drive.
Well, he's got them both in there now, which is handy.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is so it doesn't boot to that. You can usually switch them around the BIOS, too, which hard drive to boot from.
Right.
They have to be marked primary to make it a bootable drive.
Yeah. Right. Is he planning on removing the smaller drive?
I don't think so, no.
Then I'm not sure what you gain by putting Windows on the larger drive.
Yeah.
Honestly, if they're both SSD cards and they're both running, if they're both SSDs and they're both running off essentially the same controller, he's not going to get a speed boost.
No, he's not looking for that. He's looking for the space. I guess Windows is taking up most of that primary drive.
That's okay. That's okay. Let Windows take up the space on that drive. You use the other drive all for data. So this way, if he's got all his data saved on the other drive, all he's got to remember is say it's the D drive. All he's got to remember when he's backing up is just back up the D drive. Anything and everything on the D drive is backable.
Right. And almost every Windows program somewhere in this settings configuration, whatever they particularly call it, is something that says, where's your default? And so he could then say D:documents.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so once he's in, it's a pain in the neck to do it for every program. And I get that. But once he's done it, he's done. And now all of his data will live on that D drive, and his operating system will live on the C drive. And, oh, by the way, because of that, his system will seem faster.
Yes.
Because what often happens is you're not only loading data, but you're also loading bits and pieces of the operating system simultaneously. If they're coming off the same drive, everything gets queued up and it takes longer. If they're coming from two different drives, it happens a little bit faster. Now, will he notice that speed? Maybe not, but it will be happening a little faster.
Yeah, because now, say, like Nick was saying, you take the time and point things to a different direction. Say, like photos, you move that to the D drive. Same with documents. All right, so when it's booting up, it just knows that, all right, now it doesn't have to list all the photos. It just knows, photos are over here. And it's not until you open up an application that says, all right, where are the photos and what are they? Then it will then use that pointer to look up the photos and list, say, the previous photos that you used or documents or whatever. It does speed it up. It's milliseconds, but it does improve the performance.
And Steve is currently putting online a pointer to an article on how to set the default save drive.
Great.
On Windows 10.
I hope he was taking notes.
Well, he can always listen to the podcast, and he can always look at the website, soundbites.org, to see this this post.
Yeah, yeah, much appreciated. My son thanks you, and I thank you.
And thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr.
One
Cohen.
One quick question, if I might.
Yeah, go.
Quite a while ago, you spoke about using these SSD drives versus spinning Rust, and that it's advantageous to actually have both, and I don't remember why you said that.
No, I don't know why I would say that either. Yeah. Now, SSDs are certainly much faster. the big difference is that neither one is longer lived than the other.
Uh-huh.
They both last about 5 years on average.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter whether you're using an SSD or a spinning drive. Mm-hmm. You need to make sure your backups are in order. Mm-hmm. SSDs are much, much faster. But they still wear out.
And one of the ways that SSD works is when you write data to it, it damages it a little bit. It has to burn through the resistance. So one of the problems you run into is, say, your Windows swap file, if that's on an SSD, or even your Firefox and Chrome cache, this showed up in some research recently. If that's on the SSD, you can burn out your SSD in less than a year because it writes all of the data through to the drive and wears out all the sectors.
Maybe now, that's what we were talking about.
So if you can either turn your swap off, you may not need swap with an SSD, or point that to the spinning drive. Or what some people do is they'll use a cheap flash drive, like get an 8 gig flash drive for $5.
Yeah.
Put your swap on there, and then when it burns out in 6 months, put another one in. Because the writing to the data wears it out faster. And what Nick was saying about an average lifespan, that's with typical reading and writing. But having your swap on an SSD, you can eat your SSD in just, a few short months.
Wow. That was what I was vaguely remembered.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Yep. Absolutely. Have fun.
Okay.
In fact, most SSDs now are actually bigger than they're rated. We've got one company we buy them from, and it's rated at 480.
Right.
Which really means it's a 512, because that's the power of two. But they're giving you, 30 gigs of wear leveling. So it has all that slack space to move data into when it wears out one of the blocks already there. So,
and by the way, they do that automatically. As cells die, it moves those data to another cell.
Yeah. So sometimes when you get what's called a 512 drive and you format it out, it might only be 480, 490 because it's using that a leftover space for the wear level.
Some of it is being used to do the formatting. I mean, there's formatting information that has to be kept.
Yep.
But you're right, the rest of it is being used as slack to as reserve.
Yeah.
To come in when something dies.
Yeah,
do you remember when back in the day, we had to do disk cleanup? And
it would
sit there in a nice graphic. It would show the whole hard drive and would sit there moving data around.
Optimizing or what's the other word?
Defragging.
Defragging. Never do that to an SSD.
Never do that to an SSD. But I did that to my Windows machine because it's got a crappy old hard drive in it. It doesn't show you anything anymore.
No.
It just whoops and whirs and then it's done. And I thought, you've cheated me.
that was the whole fun, to sit there and watch it, swapping things out,
exactly.
And then would sit there and put X's on any sector that was bad.
Yep, and you could see a sector map of your machine.
Yeah.
Very impressive. Nowadays, everybody thinks, well, most users are stupid, and they aren't going to know what that is, so we'll just stop showing it to them.
Which
and I think
us,
that's a mistake.
Well, and part of NTFS on Windows and HFS Plus on the Mac is it doesn't let files become that fragmented in the first place.
Right, right. So you don't need it anymore,
right. Once NTFS came in, the necessity for defragging and cleaning up went away.
Right. If you have a lot of very big files, you can have issues. So maybe once every year, maybe.
Yeah.
You can do an optimization, which is defragging. But
yeah.
even that's not necessary mostly.
And with multi-terabyte drives, you always have plenty of free space.
Yeah, it's not like you're right.
Yeah, you're not hurting for certain, but not back in the days like when we used to have just 320 meg.
Right, but you can also do a disk cleanup. If you open up a window and you right-click on the drive itself, one of the things you can do in properties is do a disk cleanup, which clears out your temp files and all that other stuff, which is not a bad thing to do.
Right.
But not often, again, because if you've got a solid-state drive, you're wearing out that drive. Again, once a year on your birthday is a good time to do that. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Microsoft is making a bigger push to keep students and teachers using Windows this week.
Oh, good one.
At the annual BET Education Show in London, British Education Technology thing.
London.
In London, Microsoft is revealing new Windows 10 and Windows 10S devices that are priced from just $189. The software giant is also partnering with the BBC, Lego, NASA, PBS, and Pearson to bring a variety of mixed reality and video curricula to schools. Lenovo has created the $189 100E laptop. It's based on Intel's Celeron Apollo Lake chips. So it's a low-cost and low-powered netbook essentially designed for schools. Lenovo has also introduced its 300E, a 2-in-1 laptop with pen support, priced at $280. The new Lenovo devices are joined by two from JP with a Windows Hello laptop. Windows Hello.
Goodbye.
It's like Hello Kitty, only laptop priced at $200 and a pen and touch device at $300. All four laptops are targeted toward education, designed to convince schools not to switch to Chromebooks. Part of Microsoft's school push is related to content for teachers to use with these laptops. Microsoft is planning to release a new chemistry update for Minecraft, Education Edition, this spring. Minecraft has gotten to be fairly big in schools. It will focus on experimentation, like building compounds, tackling stable isotopes. It's a free update for everyone using the Education Edition of Minecraft. Microsoft is also tweaking Word for Mac, Outlook Desktop, and OneNote for iPad Mac to include a new immersive reader that helps with reading and writing. Microsoft is also making some mixed reality content available for both the HoloLens and the range of Windows mixed reality headsets. Pearson, the world's largest education company, will start distributing new curriculum, in March that will work on mixed reality headsets and the HoloLens. Six new apps will include immersive experiences for students, and Microsoft is even discounting its HoloLens headsets by 10%, which still puts it at a huge number, to tempt schools into trying out its augmented reality headset. Windows mixed reality headsets will still be cheaper options for schools, though. Other partnerships include Lego and BBC Worldwide. The BBC is releasing its Oceans, Our Blue Planet film to museums in March, followed by classrooms around the world. The film includes a variety of footage shot by the team behind the BBC's Blue Planet 2 series, which is amazing. By the way, Microsoft is also working with Lego to let students build tools from Lego bricks to measure topography in 2D, 3D space. All of these apps, experiences, and devices will be available through 2018, and they're all a big part of a renewed effort at Microsoft to convince students and teachers that Microsoft is serious about education. Microsoft has been losing out to Chromebooks big time in the U.S., as Google's laptops have seen most of their traction in the education market. Windows 10S was a response to Chromebooks, and we know what the S stands for, but I can't say it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're starting to see more of how Microsoft plans to tackle keeping future generations using its software and services. So would you rather see schools using Windows 10S or Chromebooks? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Okay, hear me now.
Hear me now.
Remember me later.
Yep.
NFW. No fudging way.
Yep.
Are they school systems going to go for this? And here's my reasoning. All right, I'm an IT person. All right, you want me to get these Windows 10 systems that now I have to worry about spyware, malware, viruses, and every year I got to update the OS to pay for it.
Yep.
Where's a Chromebook? Oh, I could not have to worry about that. I can control what the kids do, and they are simple and easy to use.
Yep. There is also, you can control Microsoft systems as well, but you need a Windows Server to do that. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Not just in hardware, but in the license. And then you know, it's not as cost effective for a school.
Yeah.
To buy a Windows machine and manage them as it is to buy Chromebooks and manage them. It's really that simple. Chromebooks are
They're too late to the market. They're too late.
Right. Well, they'll still win. I mean, that's what Microsoft does. They lose, they lose, they lose, and then they win. But in terms of Chromebooks, they are a lot less expensive in full cost, in ecosystem cost. They are
durable,
very durable. They are easy to replace. They are very easy to manage. They are very secure. One thing about Chromebooks is, by the way, I forgot to mention this to folks Thursday night. So if any of you out there are listening, Chromebooks by default encrypt the hard drive, well, the SSD card.
Yeah.
So if your Chromebook gets stolen, they can't even take the drive out and look at it somewhere else because it's encrypted.
Yeah.
It's just in the long run, it's a better, I think, alternative in terms of what people can do and how they can do it. You also get Microsoft does not give you, at least as far as I know for education, unlimited storage on their cloud.
Right.
So you have to buy a server to keep things. There's more cost in the back end. But with Google, as long as you use the Google Doc format, the Google formats.
Which is no biggie.
It's unlimited storage.
Yeah. And hello, the cost benefits, like you were saying, to sit there and get into all this. I mean, they're not pointing that out. But all of a sudden you start to go to a school system and try to sell this. And it's like, what incentive is there for them to get rid of the Chromebooks when now all of a sudden I've got to have, like you said, a server, and now my IT people have to worry more whether these kids are going to get infected through spyware, malware, and everything else, and I'm going to have a yearly charge to update the operating system because Windows 10, you know, is going to go to that.
Yes, they are.
Well, the next version of Windows, not necessarily 10.
Right. It won't be Windows 10.
Yeah.
But the next version of Windows.
We'll just call it Windows.
So how many people have not upgraded to 7 yet?
They're done, and, by the way. There's no path anymore.
We had a customer brought in a Vista machine this week, and his wife won't let him buy a new computer. Well, you're going to spend more fixing this one. So the delay in people from XP's Vista and 7 to go to 10, how long does it take for Windows 10 people to go to whatever comes next? So that's going to be at least 10 more years.
Right.
Before you can force them.
Yeah, I just don't see. And again, it's, you know, for them to put their trust even in Microsoft. And I'm sorry, I'm gun shy on it because Microsoft has the bad habit of trying to bring something out and all this hoopla and everything else.
Yep.
And if it doesn't do good, and they buy into it, some places buy into it, and then they abandon it.
Yep.
Oh, we're sorry. Yeah, it wasn't profitable for us, so we're leaving.
Yep.
Hello, Google Chromebooks have already proven themselves, and they got far more going for it than these Windows machines. And these other apps, I'm sure, are going to be able to run on a Chromebook also.
Yep.
I mean, so what? They're running on Windows, then they'll be able to run on a Chromebook too.
Yep. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Hey, Nick. Just wanted to follow up with problem from last week where my wife's computer wouldn't get out to the internet on Facebook, and we thought it was just Facebook. Well, after I talked to you, she told me, oh, no, it's everything else.
That makes more sense.
I was about to say, if it's just Facebook, it's a Facebook problem. If it's everything, it's a separate issue.
Well, we basically, the network was working because my Chromebook and both phones would get out over the same node on the wireless network, but I took it upstairs, plugged in, and wired, and it had the same problem. So rebooted the network just to be safe. That wasn't it. Rebooted the computer. That didn't do it. Finally just said, okay, used the Chromebook. Thank God I had it, and went out and was able to figure out how to get into Windows Safe Mode. because they don't make that real easy on Windows 10.
No, they do not.
Got into that, brought it up with networking, and instantly I had network communication. So, okay, fine. Shut it down, pulled the cord, let it reboot up. Normally, wireless went back on, instant communications, whatever the reboot did, it fixed it.
Good.
So that worked well. Also, I had talked to you about finding a headset that worked. The one gentleman called in and recommended the Tautronics. I did buy a set of those. I couldn't find a wired set, but I did buy a wireless set because I need one of those too. And very comfortable and not real expensive.
Excellent.
So if somebody's looking, that might be worth a look-see.
Perfect.
But again, it's personal preference, and so you got to go from there. This week's problem, my Win 10 unit. When you go to the bottom left corner to click the little icon to get the...
Hello?
Oops.
He hung up.
I guess his headset isn't working that well after all. Sorry.
All right, call back, Andy. Sorry, I don't know what happened. He hung up on us.
Yeah, boop.
Yep, he'll call back. I don't know. I don't know what happened to him. But we get that some Windows issues. One of the things that some people were complaining about. See now, because she didn't say it was everything. She said it was just Facebook.
Yeah.
But one something
well, for some people that is everything.
Well, yeah, right. Some people were complaining that Windows wasn't connecting to the internet, and what it was they had not let it finish an update. So it's very possible that when he rebooted, whatever little bit of the update had not fit. You know, you're supposed to do an update, then you're supposed to reboot, and it takes like an hour to actually boot up. And that may be what happened to him.
Well, I've also seen spyware.
Yes.
That will come in and literally disable the network drive, the network card, whether it be wired or wireless. It disables it and will not allow you out onto the internet.
That way nobody else can get in and get on, usurp this bad guy's control.
Right, and then once in a while he'll connect to do whatever he's stealing, and then he'll shut you back down again.
Yeah.
I get it.
You got to do due diligence as far as running the Super Anti-Spyware and the Malware Bytes. Those two programs do a fantastic job. And I had a couple folks again this week ask me, well, why do I got to run both? As I've said before, no one product does it all.
Right.
Don't put your eggs in all one basket. That's why you've got to use two. They do a more thorough job of keeping your machine clean and protected. Oh, so what? You've got to one night start one program and another night start the other. Or here's another thought. Pay for them.
And then
you can schedule them to run automatically.
Right.
You know, say one will run Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The other you can do Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays in the background.
Right.
Let it do it. And you know what? It's supporting those companies to keep making better products and keeping your machine clean.
Yep.
And I was actually surprised that they both still support Vista that I was working on this week.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Well, it doesn't cost them anything to keep supporting something that they supported for seven years ago.
Eventually, on the next rewrite to add some new feature, it's going to break old OS.
Right. You know? But until they add that new feature, there's no reason not to continue supporting this.
And there's still so many other holes in it.
Yeah, exactly right. But, if you're still running something like Vista, don't be surprised when you... It's got to be Andy, I hope.
Hold on, we'll put you back in.
There we go. We have Andy back on the line. I don't know where he went, but he's back. Hi, Andy.
Oh, somebody picked up the phone and disconnected me.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So Windows 10.
I've been listening to the comments. I did double check the machine with Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes once I got network connectivity back, because they don't run if they can't talk to the internet.
Right.
We didn't find anything. I don't know what it was, but it did fix itself as soon as we got the networking support safe mode up.
Good. So before you get disconnected again, what about Windows 10?
All right. Windows 10, when you go to the bottom left and you hit the little symbol and it brings up your, so you can shut it down.
Yep.
I click on it and nothing happens.
Not for about a minute.
I wind up doing a three-finger salute, logging off the user, logging back in the user, and then it works.
Yep.
And this happened after one of the recent reboots.
Yep. A lot of people are complaining about that right now. In fact, it's happening on my machine as well, and nobody knows quite what to do about it just yet.
Well, if you've got it and don't know what it is, then I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, yeah. I do have a laptop, and what I've learned to do is to put it to sleep when I close it instead of turning it off, and that seems to fix it because it takes a while, and it can be anywhere from 1 to 4 minutes, but once it's done doing whatever it's doing while it's booting, and I've done the same thing you have. I've checked it with everything. There's no viruses on it, any of that stuff. There's just something going on in the background, and I think it has to do with this, the two
creators update or something.
They just had an update for the two Intel
Meltdown Inspector.
That's the one I couldn't think of. Meltdown Inspector. And I think it has something to do with that. And that whatever it's doing there in the background, it does it every time you boot it up. And it's just, it takes forever.
Well, before we run out of time, because we're closing in on your 1 o'clock break here.
Yeah.
This Thursday is the first Thursday of the month. So my weekly plug for Rochester Googles.
Yep, we'll be
Thursday
doing
night
Rochester Googles.
7 o'clock at St. John's Meadow.
Perfect. Thanks. We got to go. We're going to take that's the first hour done. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back and do it all over again in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and this is member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Yeah, and we were mentioning Minecraft earlier, getting very popular again, and Microsoft bought them from Mojang, which was a huge blow to the Minecraft users because they were so afraid Minecraft was going to die.
Right.
excuse me. Well, it turns out there's another interesting connection to Minecraft. If you might remember from a couple years ago, the Mirai botnet, which took running basically on DVRs and other IoT devices, was able to take down the Dyn DNS service and knock most of the East Coast off the internet, including Amazon and Google and giant companies. Turns out that was three kids, 21-year-olds, at Rutgers University in New Jersey. One guy at Rutgers and then a friend from Pittsburgh and another friend from New Orleans, they were running a Minecraft business, hosting Minecraft servers. So one of the things in Minecraft is you don't have to go to Microsoft's servers now. You can go to someone else's servers, and they offer different features and whatnot. So these guys were running this Minecraft business, making money on it. And so they wrote this DNS, a denial of service, a DDoS program, to knock other Minecraft servers off the network so more people would come and pay him for his Minecraft business. And it worked so well and got so big so fast, I think there were estimates it was up to 600,000 devices were part of this botnet, that he started renting it out to other people. And someone bought it to take down a telecom provider in France. And then someone, you know, rented it to take down the Dyn DNS service. So the FBI had been tracking them all along. And so earlier, was it this year? Late last year, last December, the kids were pled guilty in an Anchorage courtroom. I wondered why they were being tried in Anchorage. Now the people who wrote it are in jail. But it's still lives.
Yeah.
Because there's no kill in it. You know, no way to kill it. It just keeps going.
Right.
And infecting more and more routers and DVRs and IoT devices and all that unsuspecting boxes. So if your DVR is running slow or awkward, you might have the Mirai botnet in it.
Yep.
Well, that's the whole thing, and folks don't realize it. You know, they think, whether it's that or anything else, you put something out on the internet, and it gets out there, it's dang hard to ever get it completely. It never completely gets off.
Yeah, once it's out there, it lives forever.
Apparently,
other people look at things in that, you know, they could be here or there, and it keeps living and hiding in other places.
Yep.
He apparently released the source code publicly in the Cracker forums to hide himself.
Obfuscate.
To hide himself, so if he ever got caught, he could say, no, it wasn't me. But apparently the FBI had been watching him before he did that.
Yep.
So now the code is out there, and other bad guys are using it. So there's no way to bring it down anymore.
Yep. Wow. All right.
You have to update the firmware in your DVR. Who's going to do that?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah, we know that the cable providers are not going to do that for us. And I'm sick and tired, by the way, of every time I turn on my stinking television set, it's on channel 1000 and whatever that number is.
There's a setting where you can say last channel.
Yeah,
viewed.
I've done that every single time. It still comes back to it.
Really?
Yes.
Mine always goes to channel 9 news, which I guess is okay, but no, I'd rather it be on the last channel I was on because I was watching something.
Right. You can change it, but they can override it. And so when they do, too bad for you.
See, if you cut the cable.
I know.
You don't have that issue.
You're talking to the wrong end of my family.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't even want to go to that one.
Yeah, you aren't kidding.
No. You can fight that battle yourself.
We have to admit it is easier to have everything on the cable.
Right.
But it's a lot cheaper to scatter your services around.
Right. I mean, and people say to me now, you know, I'm on Greenlight, which I love Greenlight. Spectrum is essentially the same price. Are you going to go back? I said, no, for several reasons. First, because net neutrality is gone. I know that Greenlight isn't going to screw around with what I'm getting just because
they
own
something
else. Plus,
you got a bundle.
Else.
You don't get it just for $29.
Right.
You got a bundle.
You have to bundle. And the second thing, and here's the most important thing to me. I have two main methods when I'm in my house of getting entertainment. Cable. And the internet. If they're both coming through the same thing and it goes down, I got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But might have to read a book or play the banjo or, God forbid, talk to another human being. But if they're coming from two separate things, unless it's a power outage, if cable goes down, I've still got green light. If green light goes down, which it only ever has once, twice. For 5 minutes, pretty much each. Somebody cut through a cable somewhere. And then I still have cable. And so, you know, I don't have to resort to humans to talk to.
And the Apple Cider meeting on February 14th, we're going to have Phil Dampier of Stop the Cap coming and talking about the state of the cable industry and the changes that we're already seeing because net neutrality has been defeated. In fact,
I thought that was still put on hold because of the litigation, you know.
Well, no, the FCC formally withdrew net neutrality and passed the Internet Freedom Act that allows the internet providers to be free to do whatever they want to overcharge us.
Right.
And so several states, including New York, have sued the FCC. That is still pending.
And more states were jumping on board with that.
Yeah.
And states, a couple of states, New York and I think it's Montana, have passed laws in favor of net neutrality and are essentially daring the United States government to tell them they can't do it, states' rights.
Because part of the thing in the FCC ruling was that states can't overrule the FCC. Which,
and yet they're still doing it and saying, states' rights.
Yeah.
It's in our Constitution, dude. Go away.
You know, and this still slays me. Third world countries have faster internet service and pay less.
And cheaper,
than we do.
Yep. Yeah, if you're one of those people who's never traveled or never pays attention to what else is going out in the world, you're some sort of jingoistic isolationist, you don't know this, But in most of the rest of the world, internet is faster and much cheaper, than what we pay here.
You get a gigabit for $20 a month.
Yeah.
That is common.
And it's unlimited.
Yep.
In most places.
Yeah,
and
no
we
caps.
Don't have any of that. Yeah.
I drove to Buffalo the other day. Gas is 20 cents a gallon higher.
Yep.
Just in Buffalo.
Yep.
And so who knows what internet services are like.
Yeah, exactly. All right, to another piece of news here. Intel chief executive Brian Krzanich told investors on Thursday. See, this is the thing you want to listen to always when people have an SEC filing, Securities Exchange Commission filing, or they have an investor conference. They are obligated by law to tell the truth in those.
Yeah, you don't want to get foul of the SEC.
Right. And also you don't want to lie to your investors anyway because they will stop investing in you.
Yep.
So if you want to know what's really going on, that's when you talk to that's where you pay attention. You pay attention to them when they're talking to their investors. That's how we know that despite everything else Verizon has said, they're saying that they told their investors it's much cheaper for us to expand our networks and to make them faster, but we're not going to do it. They blatantly came right out and said that, but of course, you don't hear that because you don't hear that. I don't know why.
People don't want high-speed internet.
Right, people don't want high-speed internet. Intel chief executive Brian Krzanich told investors Thursday afternoon that the company plans to release silicon with built-in mitigations to the Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities later this year, a statement that raises more questions than it answers. For Intel, it really has been a tale of two cities scenario. Intel reported the best quarter in its history as fourth quarter set in 2017 revenue grew 4% year over year to $17.1 billion. But Intel has also been in the face of Spectre and Meltdown, two critical vulnerabilities built into basically every processor chips in the PC and server markets. Why this matters? Intel has been busy working with PC makers and OS vendors to release microcode that includes so-called mitigations, microcode updates that patch the vulnerabilities. But even that hasn't gone so well. Intel advised end users to stop applying the patches after systems unexpectedly rebooted or took forever to load or whatever, whatever. Now Intel has revealed it's working on a more permanent fix, but the impact on users remains unknown. Security is a top priority for Intel, foundation to our products, and it's critical to the expanse of our data-centric strategy, Krzanich told investors in a conference call. Our near-term focus is on delivering high-quality mitigations to protect our customers' infrastructure from these exploits. We're working to create silicon-based changes to future products that will directly address the Spectre and Meltdown threats in hardware, and those products will begin appearing later this year. Okay. Intel's client computing group reported a sales decline of 2% to $9 billion. Microsoft notebook revenue was flat, while sales into desktop PCs declined by 8%. Krzanich reiterated that the vulnerabilities won't have any effect on future sales. I can tell you at the highest level that we're not seeing much of a change in those forecasts as a result of this, he said, in the discovery of the vulnerabilities and their mitigations. I've assigned some of the very best minds at Intel to work through this, Krzanich added. I think we could see some increased demand for servers, but not for PCs, as I do not think many will notice the performance degradation. I think he's wrong, of course, personally, because some systems have been reported as slowing down as much as 30%. People are going to notice a 30% slowdown. So if you notice the slowdown or bulking or whatever since your last update, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Oh, Steve.
And by the way, this hits PCs, Macs, Linux boxes, Chromebooks,
phones, everything.
It's got a chip in it.
So apparently, Steve Gibson, in his spare time, he wrote a program called Inspector that will inspect your computer to see if it's vulnerable to Spectre. So it's Inspector.
Well, I could write that. All it is do you have a chip? Yes, you're vulnerable.
Yeah.
Pretty much done.
Duh.
Yep. So I'll post a link to this. So he's got to finish Squirrel so he can get back to SpinRite 6.1.
Right.
And one of its big features is it's significantly faster. It can do 2 terabytes an hour.
How does he get it faster? He's already written it in hand-coded assembler.
Well, there's been advances in the hard drive interfaces in the last 20 years. So, so right now you're looking about, you know, terabyte a month. It's going to go to a 2 terabytes an hour and natively run on a Mac.
Nice.
So it, because it's assembler, it runs on an x86, but it uses int 13 to access your keyboard, and the Mac doesn't have int 13. So it works fine in a VM. So you can load a DOS VM and load free DOS because that's what it uses, and it runs fine. It's just even slower in a VM.
Right. That's what I was meaning to load. Unfortunately, I didn't get to it this week because of a bunch of other things, including a lousy Windows laptop. But I finally was going to load FreeDOS back into a VM and play with it a little bit.
Ooh.
DOS, baby.
Yeah. Hardcore.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
You got to remember, with DOS and Linux, the slashes are the other way.
Yeah. Exactly.
Go back into Edlin and do the line commands for editing.
Right. Edlin.
Yeah.
I told you.
I used Pico the other day.
I use Nano all the time, which is Pico, essentially, with a couple little changes. There's also Joe's own editor, and it actually uses the WordStar commands.
Wow.
So Control K, Control S, Control K,
V. I forget, there was one that I used a lot because Edlin, you know, would sit there, and it was so, you know, goofy in the way that I used another one that would just put the whole, say, you're editing your autoexec.bat. It would just put it all right there and let you go in and edit each line a lot easier than Edlin.
Yep.
Because Edlin was tricky. You had to relist it, make sure you typed it right, and then go down to the next line, put the line number in, hit enter. It would bring that up. You have to go make the changes, save it, and then relist it.
I found a program solution this week for a customer that really likes WordPerfect.
Great program.
WordPerfect for Windows is still being published by Corel. But WordPerfect for Mac hasn't been updated, I think, since 1999.
Right.
And so Columbia University put together this package called WP Mac App to let you run WordPerfect 3 from 1999 in a Mac OS 8 virtual machine emulator under Mac OS 10 and an Intel Mac. So there's like three layers of manipulation there.
Yep.
But since it's such an old program, it runs just fine.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Meenik, Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. His member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, I could listen to that song all day. We are Soundbites.
We're talking about WordPerfect, and it's so big in the legal profession.
Oh, huge,
Lawyers loved it because it was a blank screen with a blinking cursor, and you just write.
Yeah.
Apparently, so there's a company called Lawbox that makes a WordPerfect viewer for Mac. So you can view WordPerfect documents that other people might send you.
Well, and WordPerfect had add-ons. So, for example, you could get a legal add-on that put all the everything in the right format with numbers on the sides and the right citations and everything else. So WordPerfect became the go-to program for legal people. And then there was another set of add-ons for the medical profession. And the WordPerfect people had it going on. They knew what they were doing.
And what did and they always throw out at their presentations?
M&M's, baby.
Yeah.
Little bags. If you
bags of colored candy, coated chocolate.
Right.
Yeah. Coated chocolate. Get that sugar high going.
Right. 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 It was a very, very hot product in its day, and you can emulate it with things like Joe and stuff like that. So it's very cool. Joe's own editor. And the Joe of Joe's own editor is not the Joe of Joe's window manager. By the way, they're two different Joes, just so you know.
But does Joe know Joe?
Joe may know Joe now because Joe and Joe have often met at conferences, I suspect.
Hey, okay.
Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Hey, Joe, what do you know? Just got back from Buffalo.
Cup of Joe?
Cup of Joe. All right.
Sorry, Joe. Sorry, all you Joes.
Sorry, all the Joes out there. Some of the cool, more subtle features of Android 8.1 are still rolling out weeks after the first significant update to Oreo was released. For instance, this week Google announced that Oreo will now display the speed of nearby open Wi-Fi networks to help you decide whether they're even worth the effort to connect to. The Wi-Fi settings menu will now display one of four speed labels: very fast, fast, okay, or slow. The difference between very fast and fast, according to Google, is that you can stream very high-quality videos on very fast and most videos on just fast. Most coffee shop dwellers should be fine with the okay level, as that's enough for web browsing, social media, unless you're doing video on social media, and Spotify streaming. Private Wi-Fi networks that require passwords, of course, won't display any speed data since it's really none of your business, and Google can't randomly test them because you would need the password. But they do continue to display signal strength. Google says network administrators can also opt out of Android's Wi-Fi assistant showing speed info by using a canary URL, a special URL that it goes and checks before it will give you the speed rating. So if you thought Android 8.1 was all about cheeseburger emoji and switching on the Pixel 2's visual core chip, it turns out there's still more neat stuff out there to discover. Once your device gets Android 8.1 to begin with anyway, Verizon users likely will have to wait until their children inherit their phones. Until then, you'll just have to take a chance like the rest of us. So do you care how fast the networks are that you're connecting to? Would you like to have that information? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Oh, and by the way, before I forget, I realize I do, but don't write in. I realize the proper name is GNU Nano, not just Nano. It's GNU Nano. I get that. But yeah, well, there's lots of cool things that Android 8.1 is doing. Of course, one of the problems that people have with Android phones or have had up until recently is that, in fact, there's too many hands in the pie. If you have a Google phone, you have the latest of everything because Google just updates your phone.
Mm-hmm.
With, for example, my Verizon phone, before I get 8.1, Samsung has to get their hands on it, and they screw around with it for a while.
Putting in all their bloatware.
Right, and then Verizon gets their hands on it, and they screw around with it for a while. And this is true of updates as well as the initial purchase of the system. So most of us on most carriers are behind. Google is working toward changing that so that you will bypass all of that nonsense and just get what you get. But right now that's still true. So I suspect the vast majority of you are not on on Android Oreo 8.1. But on something less. I don't even know what I'm on.
That's why I'm so glad when they first, you know, I had that Samsung 7 Note. And, you know, I had to go through the iterations of that because of the burning up. And they were so insistent. Well, you got to turn that in and go for the 8. And they wanted me to get the 8. Well, I said, no, I'm waiting another week and going for the Google phone. And, well, no, you can't. I just, excuse me, did you pay for this phone? Well, no, but it's a fire hazard. I says, you know what? I'll take that chance. And I walked out. And, oh, they were ticked because they wanted me to, you know, switch over to the Samsung 8. I said, no, I'm waiting for the Google phone.
Yep.
And it's the best decision I made in, you know, not listening to their hype, because I know a couple other folks that were told, oh, yeah, you can't leave here with it. You know, hello, wrong. Until you buy this phone from me, you don't tell me what to do. I'm paying for it.
That's right. There's just a couple of things I don't like about the Pixel. One is I can't change the battery. Two is I can't make it wireless charging. And really the third one is I can't put in an SD card, micro SD card. Other than that, I think it's probably the best phone out there, but I want those things.
But see, the battery, I mean, I leave mine on all day. And by evening, and this is using it and checking it, and you know, throughout the whole day. And I even use Waze on it quite a bit.
Yep. No, and I get all of that, but my phone is 4 years old. I don't change my phone that often.
Right.
And in fact, my battery was down to, you know, hours a day, and I finally changed it at Christmas. It's like I got a brand new phone.
Yep.
You know, I get to the end of the day, and I still got 50% of my battery left, no matter what I did with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I could do that because I could change the battery myself.
Well, and as far as the models, I know they have, you know, what is it, the 32 and the 64.
Right.
Which is no biggie because, again, being the Google phone, nothing gets stored on here. If I need anything, it's up on the cloud.
And I do understand that, but I still want the option to do what I want to do.
For what's the extra memory for?
I want to be able to put stuff on it so that I, for example, when I have pictures,
mm-hmm.
I want them to be there so I don't have to use my data to go look at them.
Well, I do that too. I've still got pictures
on
my phone.
I want more apps. I want to be able to store PDFs for when I'm doing stuff that I can look it up and things like that. A lot of things that are just harder to do when I have to use somebody else's wireless or my data,
mm-hmm.
Which is what bothers me the most. I'm very, I just, and it's really, that's the less thing. It's really for me about being able to change the battery if I need to, and in particular, wireless charging. I never want to plug anything into my phone again, ever.
Well, I think you can still get the adapters for it to do wireless.
I don't know that.
I can't speak to that either because right. Because like I say, I don't worry about that because mine just goes on the charger automatically at night.
Right.
And I'm good for the whole day.
But I've got a wireless charger. Well, it's at home now. Obviously, I don't have an office anymore. I have a wireless charger in the computer room. I've got a wireless charger in my headboard. I've got a wireless charger in my car. And it's much faster and easier to just throw that thing on the charger than it is to get in the car and plug it all in. And
can
then,
the new the new Pixel 2?
It doesn't have it built in. Again, I don't know.
So this is the Pixel 1. I found a way to do the Pixel 1. So let's see about the Pixel 2. One of the things I read about some of the first wireless charging things is that you had to get it exactly on the pad for it to work.
Right.
And so one guy I was listening to on a podcast, he has his phone on his bedside table,
mm-hmm.
And you know, if he rolls over and knocks the table, it falls off the charge pad, and then he gets up in the morning and his phone's dead,
right?
Because it didn't charge all the way.
Right. Mine charger at my bedside is a stand, and it's actually got three wireless chargers in it, so I it's hard for me to miss. So that's not a problem there. And in the car, of course, it clamps in, so it's right. But I don't, there you go. Does not
support. So you have to put a third-party wireless charger on it.
Yeah, but now you're connected, dangling a thing somewhere. I don't like it. Right now, it's just the back of my phone.
Yeah.
And because I can remove the back on my phone,
mm-hmm.
it means that I can replace the back on my phone with the wireless charger. In fact, I bought this phone from Linda, and it's
four
years old, and she had the charger and everything. So I thought, okay, I can do that. And I fell in love with it. I don't ever want to have to plug my phone in ever again, ever.
Well, the one of the big selling points for me in the Google phone was that it didn't come with all that darn bloatware.
I agree with all of that.
That I loved. And like I say, for me and my personal uses, you know, the battery life isn't an issue. And as far as storing stuff in that, I don't find it that, you know, hard, even with my data, you know, to quick grab a file or that if I need to, or a photo or that type of stuff off the cloud, because there are so many places around now that you can connect wirelessly that you go to that it's just offered. I mean, throughout my whole day of driving, you know, I'm hit different places and free internet, and I've connected to all of them.
No, I absolutely get that. But I want what I want.
And, that's why, you know, that's why they have different phones, different types.
And a lot of times, especially for travelers in like airports and train stations, you have to be really careful of those free internets, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's a bad guy over in the corner creating a rogue router.
Spoof you.
And you connect to his free internet, and everything you do goes through his computer, and he can spy on everything you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No,
so
I'm not
so when that. When you're connected to public Wi-Fi, so in general, if you're ever connected to public Wi-Fi, never do anything you wouldn't want somebody seeing you do.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're at the coffee shop, use your cellular because at least that's encrypted.
Yep. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
Then your cellular
like
data
anything
gets run
else, you got to do use due diligence, yep. You know, because there's no matter what, there's going to be some other idiots out there. I can't say idiots because they're pretty smart and they're trying to steal your information.
Right.
And that's
exactly
their job.
Right.
They're out there and they're going to try to get it 16 ways from Sunday. They're going to make your life a living hell if they can by stealing your personal information. And we've seen it where folks could be carrying, you know, their laptops or their pads and that, even in a book bag or that, and they go by with these scanners and they don't even have to, you know, they could be within a few feet and steal information off your machine if you leave it running. You know, because a lot of folks will sit there, oh, I got to quick go. And they quick close the laptop or tablet, don't really turn it off, throw it back in their bag, and off they go. That's still running. Hello.
Here's the thing that most impresses me. There is an app you can get for your phone. And I set my phone down on the table. I am at a coffee shop. I'm at an airport, whatever. And Steve is here working away on his laptop. I put my phone down next to it, like it's, I can make a charge, whatever I want to do while I'm sitting there. And it reads the vibrations from the table through the accelerometer and figures out what he's typing. Is that unbelievable?
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, I can believe. Yeah.
It works.
That makes sense.
It's kind of magic, but it works, and it's
scary.
Scary.
It's something like 75-80% accuracy based on the letter frequency in English.
Right. It's based on the letter frequency in English, based on how strong the vibration is. So if I put it here next to you when you type Q's and A's and Z's, it's going to be a stronger seismic signal than when you're doing P's and L's and M's because they're on the other side of the keyboard. So it can tell both from strength and from frequency. And it's about 80-85% accurate, which is enough for most things.
Yep.
Right? So, you know, the earliest Dragon dictates were only 70% accurate. So, and people lived with those for years. So, yeah, those kind of things are out there, I guess. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hi guys. Speaking of Android phones, I got a question that maybe you can help me out with. It's kind of bizarre. I get every once in a while on my notification page, a score will come up. It'll say Green Bay so-and-so and so-and-so. And I clear it out, and a couple of days later, it'll come back. So I clear my cache, clear the history, clear everything I can think of. I have no notifications on anything for anything, you know.
Right.
Including scores or sports. Sometime back, I think I visited their site to look up the Green Bay players, blah, 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 and also the New England. But I don't know how. I called Google. They don't have, they said, we'll do a factory reset. I'm not going to do a factory reset, lose everything. So I don't. You got any suggestions about how to make this thing go away?
Yeah, Google has an assistant. And I'm trying to figure out where you changed that because I haven't done it in approximately forever. But you can have, there you go. If you go into if you go into settings and then sound and notification. At the bottom, second last thing is app notifications.
Okay.
And you look in there and see if there is some sort of app that is set to do notifications. And if there is, you can, of course, delete it or whatever it is you want to do and make that go away. But you can also say... hide all the content on your lock screen. The bottom one is notification access. That's actually the one I'm looking at. And right now, for example, the only thing I have in there is Android Wear, and it's turned on, and that means it will send notifications to my phone. But you may have something else in there as well. There's also the Google Cards. the Google Cards.
So I've been seeing more and more going to a website. A little message will pop up and say, do you want to allow this website to send you notifications? And I haven't found a no, never button.
Right. It's always a not now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so,
I did that. See, they do have a list. I did what you said. Excuse me. Not now, but I'll do it again. But I ran into, a whole list of things. You want notifications on the weather or your favorite team or
right.
All of those buttons are off. That's what the phone is.
All right. Hold on. We have to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Ed from Henrietta, and you. This is 41 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we still have Ed from Henrietta on the line. Ed, you there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, here's what you do. You need to open the Google app. Now, the way you do that is you go into apps, and you find an app named, shockingly, Google. And it's basically the Google G in a circle.
Okay, right.
That will show you all kinds of things, lots of news, all kinds of stuff. And each of those is called a card. And if you scroll down, you will see somewhere. Somewhere will be the scores for what I forget what team it was, but it'll be there. And
okay.
In that card, in the upper right of that particular card are those three little dots.
Yep.
And you click that and it'll say, you know, do you want to share it or whatever, or you're not interested in this team, I'm not interested in stories about this, whatever it'll say, and that will let you make that go away and you shouldn't see them anymore.
All right, I'll try it. Either that or take it outside and introduce to a hammer, so that'll fix everything. Okay.
That should do it too, yes, absolutely.
Okay, buddy, thanks a lot, appreciate it.
Yep, good luck.
Bye.
Google Assistant, just like every other product from every other manufacturer, tries to make your life easier. And if at some point you've said, I absolutely want to see these, or you've gone to a website that turns it on for you because they love you so much, you then have to go figure out how to turn it off. So that would be true of whatever and from whoever. So and you do that through the Google, through the search app, which is just Google with the G in a circle. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm going to ask you a question. Basically, I have a theory, and you can blow it out of the water if you like.
Okay.
I just bought a new router. When I set it up, I set it up at relatively high security. I now cannot get my older a tablet that's 8 years old, a Kindle 2, cannot sign into the internet. I'm using the 2G because I know sometimes they don't know the 5. I'm wondering, is it possible I set the security up too high?
Yes.
I ran into the same problem with our Nintendo DS. It only supports WEP encryption.
Yep.
And that may be looking for the specs on the Kindle 2, that it may be that's the only encryption it supports, and WEP is broken and should not be used. So all the new routers are setting themselves up as WPA2 now.
Yeah.
So that could be a problem. What is possible is you can use a guest network with no password and
okay,
put the Kindle on that network.
And that would be a higher security, but no password.
It would be low security and zero password. Yeah. But you could also set up a separate network. Depending on the router you have, you could also set up a separate network that does WEP. It is broken. It is not secure. But at least it's something that the average person won't be able to just jump into immediately.
Okay, so set up a separate network with a WEP.
Right. WEP security encryption, basically.
Which is the older encryption that we don't use anymore. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so I probably set it up too high.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Well, you set it up as high as you should.
Yeah.
To keep the bad guys out.
But you honestly can't set it up too high.
Yeah, but the old technology just didn't keep up with it.
Right.
And it can't.
Right. So, yeah, you didn't do anything wrong, but the Kindle isn't doing anything right. So you have to figure out a way to get that online, and the only way to do that is to set up a WEP, separate network that does WEP.
The other thing to do is in your Kindle, see if it gives you the option of WPA versus WEP, and tell it WPA, because that's what you want it to use.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. You've made my day. I'm not a complete idiot.
Nope, you are not.
Almost. I keep working on it.
Yep.
Good luck on getting there. Thanks, Steve.
And in fact, one of the problems we're seeing, well, from your different point of view, WPA3 is under development now. But the Wi-Fi Alliance that works on these protocols is a closed group, paid membership only, and no one can see what their protocols are.
Right.
So the security community can't vet them. That's why we have found problems with WEP after it came out. We found problems with what's the push button?
Whatever you push
a button and it joins the network.
Yep.
That's broken. People can get into your network if you have that turned on. And so WPA2 has been weakened. It's not broken yet, but it's been weakened. And so WPA3, the security community wants to get in there and vet it, but they can't without paying a ton of money to join the Wi-Fi Alliance.
Right. All right. We got a couple of minutes. Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Yeah. A little while ago, Nick was talking about accessing his pictures without going through using his data, which would mean that it would have to be stored locally right on your phone, right?
Right.
Well, is there a way to link your phone? Let's say you're in your house and you have Wi-Fi. Link your phone directly to your computer, hard disk, let's say a desktop computer, via Wi-Fi.
Well, yes-ish. I suppose you can set up a server that would serve your stuff in your home. If you're going through Wi-Fi, it doesn't use your data. So when I'm at home, I can access all the pictures on my phone. I can do whatever I want to do, and that's fine. I can do it here at the studio because I'm hooked into the studio's Wi-Fi, and that's all free, and that's fine. But if I'm out somewhere, I'm at a bar, and I want to show somebody a picture of my cat. That's going to be using my data. And because I don't have unlimited data, because it isn't unlimited and that porks me off, I'm now using my data unless I've got it stored actually on my phone. So I prefer to do that.
So a lot of us that have mobile devices, even if we have cellular service in our device, we really try to connect to the public Wi-Fis that are there.
Right.
But then, as we mentioned earlier, you have to remember that when you're on the public Wi-Fi, it's possible for anyone to see what you're doing.
Sure, right. It's not secure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So it's a trade-off, but I don't, with most of the phones out today, I don't have the option to make that decision.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what bothers me is the lack of my ability to make the decision.
Yeah, when I had cellular on my iPad, I would keep it turned off all the time.
Sure.
Until I actually needed it, because one time when I didn't do that, one of my games did a background update, and it sucked my entire month down in an hour.
Yep.
Okay, it's a trade-off.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Tom.
Now, one of the things you can do, depending on your cellular plan, if you have, say, a cellular phone, which most people do, if you have a cellular tablet, most of the companies want you to get a second cell plan. $10 a month or something for that device. You likely have the ability to turn on a cellular hotspot on your phone, and then your tablet sees it as Wi-Fi. and it uses the cellular plan on your phone. It still uses cellular data, but you only need one plan on your phone.
Right. And if you are a Verizon user, Verizon, one of the things when they got some of the public spectrum, they signed a document saying that they would let people do hotspots.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot stop you from doing hotspots. So, you know, I have Verizon, and back when it was unlimited, before they stopped being unlimited, no matter what they call it, I used to set up hotspots all the time and do stuff.
Yep.
But clearly not anymore, no.
And I've been hearing ads. There's a company called MitSim that's been advertising in a lot of podcasts now, where you can get 3 months for $15 a month at 20 gigs. And if you buy now, you know, they double it. So basically you get a really good introductory price at 2 gigs per month of cellular. So a lot of people will do that pay-as-you-go rather than trying to get a plan for how much data they're using. So you use what data you need, and you don't have to pay for data you're not using.
Right, right. All right, that's it. That's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier next week. The show ends at 2 and we're done. But I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back to see you with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in a known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites. And it's right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.